Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on Community Radio. Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. My name is Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prishkintas.
We gather here once a week around our kitchen table at the studios of KHOI Community Radio in beautiful downtown Ames, Iowa on a beautiful summer day. And we get by with a little help from our friends.
Oh, yes. The Donalana Kitchen Show is sponsored in part by the Mucky Duck Pub, where the pub means community. For information, go to www.themuckyduckpub.com or call the pub and ask for Marcus.
Ah, very good. A beautiful day. We have had an interesting June so far. Who couldn't believe that June is kind of winding up here with the tail end of it, kind of looking forward to 4th of July next week and all that sort of thing. But, boy, the weather has been a challenge here. In central Iowa, most of the Midwest, things have been soggy. Farmers have an awful hard time getting their crops in and probably won't for a lot of that has washed down the Mississippi River to the Gulf of Mexico. Lots of rain here and unusually cold weather. I must say this unusually cold weather. I've had to replant a few things back in May because the tomatoes did not like the cold
weather. We're not getting snow or anything.
No.
But it is wet. And it's almost like we keep having these, it's like in the tropics. You get a burst of rain and then the sun comes out. Huh? It's very sunny right now, but we had a burst this morning. Did you have a burst out of
your house? A burst.
Yep. Well, which means I don't have to water my potted plants. But
it's kind of tricky if you're hanging clothes on the line. I know many people don't do that, but I do. And so you got to kind of watch the sky. So, like I said, this is a beautiful day here, despite the interesting up and downs in the temperature and in the weather.
What's this done for your tomatoes, Lana?
They are slow. They have sat there and not done anything when it's been, 70 degrees, 40 at night, 70. They're just starting to set buds. I noticed a few tomatoes that have little green tomatolets on, but boy, it's going to be a while, folks. Patience. And here we are with all kinds of good things to talk about. We're going to talk about berries and butterflies and being thankful for what the earth gives us. Oh, back to weather, this heat and wet and this climate changes. It affects food and people and plants and animals. Here we are in the Midwest, a little soggy and a little cool, and halfway around the world, India, people are dying. It is hot. It is dry.
Right. We're getting the Indian monsoons right here dumped in the fields of Iowa, I guess. It's a little confusing for all of us.
And I heard on the news last night that Europe is like really hot.
Oh, yeah, going to suffer a terrible heat wave once again.
See those pictures of tourists in front of the famous European cathedrals, and they're just not looking very happy. They're very hot. They're very hot. I noticed that on the BBC News last night, they had a little bit about how France has turned on every sort of watering
sprinklers,
device.
Sprinklers, fountains,
People are wading. People are splashing the misters and probably eating lots of ices and ice creams and that too. So, well, at least they're giving it a try because they've had extra heat in the past and it has not been so good.
Right, and they don't usually head to the beaches until August. So,
ooh. Well, thinking about how things change, we think about butterflies. I haven't seen a whole lot of butterflies here, and people try to keep track of butterflies and what goes on with them. Here in the Midwest, we kind of look forward to having the monarchs come through. I have not seen one so far. Have you, Donna? I've seen some other kinds, but
I can't tell you exactly which. I mean, I know it's black and orange, but there's a few that are black and orange. So
that's true.
I did see a dragonfly in the yard.
There we go.
Right.
Well, I talked to somebody who does know about butterflies, Ben Hawksh, and he kind of let us in on some interesting work that he's doing and about the milkweeds that feed the butterflies.
I'm a forager, and I'm going to be talking to you today about milkweed and monarchs. Yeah, so I am part of a project out at Camp Dodge Military Base, funded through the Department of Defense and Tufts University out of Boston. And out there, I'm part of a three-year study that's looking at disease transfer in monarch butterflies. Everyone's concerned about their overwintering numbers down in Mexico, and some of us have been lucky enough to go down there and see the pine trees covered in living leaves of sorts. I haven't made it myself, but I would love to make it down to Michoacan, to the mountains, to see that. So people are planting milkweed in their yards of various kinds and colors and shapes. Iowa has something like, 17 or 19 different species of milkweed. We usually think of butterfly weed or common milkweed, the ones with the globe-like purple flowers that get tall, or the butterfly weed that's got the bright orange tops that, your drier or rockier sites. But there are a whole bunch of other ones out there as well. So the study is just kind of looking at how diseases move and if we need to be worried about it or not. So I take a little sticker and I put them on the little butterfly's abdomen and take a little scale sample and see if it's got the presence of or absence of these spores. And I take a little gel pen. I put a couple of colors on their wings, whether it's purple, green, blue, orange. So I know that this one is Mary and the other one is Joe and, how far they've gone that day. I swear it's every five-year-old girl's dream for a job, but I've managed to land it for a couple of summers. we're finding that, at least at Camp Dodge, there's not a lot of this disease to worry about. But it's something that, if we have more habitat, there's more room for butterflies to spread out, and we may not really have to worry about this in the future. But I'm glad to be a part of the study. Now, on top of planting all this milkweed in your yards, if you've listened to the show before, I am an advocate for eating wild food, So this milkweed, common milkweed specifically, is a great wild food to eat. So this season, and during this time of year, some of the plants are just starting to make little tiny flowers, and they look like little cauliflower buds that are hanging up towards the top of the tree. They're about the size of a ping pong ball right now. In places that don't get as much sun, they may be a little shorter, and the tops of the plants may be pretty flexible. I guess what I'm trying to say is that this whole plant is edible and pretty good. Early in the season, I'll break off the tops of the plants and strip a couple of the leaves off, so there's just a couple of little ones on top. And you kind of just feel for that rubbery part, like you're harvesting asparagus, and where it snaps is the place that you grab it. You can eat these straight up raw if you want to. They're not too bad. The latex in there doesn't really come through, when you're chewing on them. They may get on your finger and feel a little sticky, but the flavor is very pleasant. They're great sauteed up or grilled just like asparagus. Just be cautious when you get around this time of year to be looking for little caterpillar eggs on the bottom side of the leaves or little caterpillars themselves, nibbling on them. So maybe avoid those or brush the caterpillars off to another plant. Milkweeds are very resilient. If you break them off, they're going to just sprout right back and they're probably going to even do better. Especially because milkweeds are a food source the whole season in Iowa. So if you cut down your first crop of milkweed and you let a second one regrow, you're going to be allowing really fresh, vibrant food for butterflies when kind of the other plants are getting a little leathery and a little older, and not as tender for the caterpillars. Now, mentioning these little flower buds again, I like to take those and saute them up. I've also seen them pickled, just like you would a pepper or, a green bean. They have a really nice texture to them, a little bit of a floral taste, a nice chew, and a nice addition to just about anything. Now, even later in the season, when these flowers open up, it's going to be another couple weeks. like these big globe-like flowers, and they've got these little traps in each one of the little flowers for the butterfly feet to get stuck in. You know, monarchs are members of the brush-footed family of butterflies. So they've got these really sticky hairs on their feet, and if you ever see one on top of a milkweed feeding, them and other insects will actually get their feet stuck inside of the flowers. And when they pull them out, they get covered in these little pollen sacs, and then they help pollinate the other flowers out there. But I go through and I snip off a couple of those flowers for myself because, well, I don't think the monarchs mind sharing with me. And I make cordials with those. So I make a flavored soda with that and a little bit of lemon juice and sugar. And it's a really nice, bright pink, you know, floral tasting beverage for the summer. Beyond that, you know, when I think of milkweeds, if we're looking to plant for monarchs, the research shows that common milkweed is probably the best host plant for butterflies. Maybe not the best nectar source, but definitely the best host plant. So the caterpillars survive the best on the common milkweed. If you have a friend that has a patch, you know, you can get some seeds in the ground, but the easiest way to get it going is just take a shovel to the inside of it in the early spring, grab a couple of those shoots and put them into your garden, because milkweeds spread mostly by roots when they're out in the prairie, although they do make some really beautiful cottony seeds, you know, later in the season.
You mean all of that business up on top with those wonderful flying seeds and that beautiful cone that pops open, that's just all for show? There's a lot of it going on underneath the ground.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, who doesn't do a little bit of something just for show? Yeah, that's probably the best way to get them established. You know, if you see a big patch of milkweed out in a prairie, you know, I usually expect them to be the same individual. You know, like you would see a black locust tree or an aspen grove. It's all roots underground that are just making new shoots. So you're not going to be harming anything by grabbing a little chunk from your neighbor's fence row or, you know, your nearby butterfly garden if you get permission to dig a little piece.
Wonderful things about butterflies and milkweed. And of course, Ben tells me you can eat them too. We always learn something new when you talk to Ben Hawks. He has a lot of experience as a forager, and he gets to dance around with butterflies for the months of the summer. It's kind of nice to know that there's other things going on at Camp Dodge besides all the military things. There's butterfly. When I first heard about that project, I thought, uh-oh, what are they going to use butterflies for now? I thought, oh dear. But this is really a
butterfly spying network. Well,
you know, they do drones down there, so I thought, well, butterfly. Well, anyway, I'm glad there's such good things going on down there, and you can. And Donna, you said you've got some milkweeds growing in your yard.
I do. You know, a few years ago when we started, everyone was about going on about the sizable decline in the population of monarchs, and everybody's supposed to put it in their garden. So I dutifully put a few in. I think I did it by seed. I think I got some seed pods and just kind of distributed them close to the ground. And then by the next year, I had one or two, and now I have quite a few. They just kind of pop up here and there.
And,
so,
yeah.
You know me, I love a perennial. It makes it make gardening really easy.
And they're pretty, too. Good. So, think of the butterflies. They're out there. And this time of year, we can look forward to berries. Berries and tree fruit.
Yep, we're starting in on the berry cycle.
All kinds of things. Mulberries. Mulberries are ripening out at my house, and the blue jays and the other birds, and it's really fun to watch these squirrels get a little tipsy when the mulberries get a little overripe, because they just fill their little faces, and I've actually seen them fall off branches, but they just keep going back. It's fun. I like mulberries too. There's a mulberry tree just kind of a few steps out of my back door, and it's a great thing to go out and put some on your morning cereal. They're right there. They're hanging there. Elderberries are flowering. They're not ready yet, but we'll look forward to elderberries. Juneberries, if you have a juneberry tree or a saskatoon, those are edible, and I love that with ice cream, and strawberries. And cherries. Donna, talk about cherries.
Well, my cherry tree is very happening. And actually, we were going to pick the cherries last night. And about the time that we had kind of scheduled to have a little picking crew, we had a huge burst of rain. So we're going to try again tonight. But I don't want to do like last year. I kind of missed the moment. I got too busy and I kept saying, oh, I'll do it tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. And it was very rainy. And by the time the tomorrow came when I went out there, I guess the squirrels could have gotten drunk on them. They were, you know, they were fermenting and past due. So I'm ready to get out there and collect them this year.
Definitely, cherries are something you have to be right on about, and cherries.
Yeah, because there are other critters who are right on about it also.
You think, oh, the cherries look great, and the next morning, all the birds thought the cherries looked great too. What kind of cherry tree do you have?
Is the tart one? Is that the Morency?
If you have, Morency is a tart one.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think that's what I have.
Morency, yeah.
Yeah, it's definitely a pie cherry, my favorite.
Mm-hmm. I think the as I understand it, the pie cherries, these slightly sour cherries, are the ones that grow really well here. And they're just a nice tree to have with you.
Well, I also saw in the news that we were having a turkey has begun growing out for export tart cherries. You notice the last few years you've been able to get tart cherries in the supermarket at very reasonable prices?
Really?
Well, here's the problem. They want to grow out their fruit exporting capacity. So apparently they are picking them and selling them below market cost, and they are driving out our domestic cherry producers, which are mainly in Michigan, and I believe Utah was the other state where there's a lot of cherry production.
Oh, really?
So the conglomerated cherry group, who's probably not terribly affluent anyway, hired some lawyers, and they are filing a what's it called when you're dumping onto a market at under market cost? They're filing a trade complaint. So, while it's, you know, I love tart cherries and I've been really happy to see them more widely available, I would hate it if having that availability makes it so we have no more domestic cherries. And that's a real possibility, except for, of course, if you grow your own. But I don't dry mine.
Well, right. And if you want to put up some and do a couple pies, you need a few. And
right.
It's good to have that sort of.
Right. You know, but like if you want to make chocolate cherry bread, you usually use a dried tart cherry, which is a wonderful thing. So it's a bit of a dilemma.
It is. Turkey. Thinking of turkey, that is kind of the ancestral home of a lot of different fruits. They have a lot of different microclimates there and hillsides and apples and nuts. And now we know cherries. They do a lot of stuff
there. Well, yeah, you know, it's with this global marketplace, it is very disruptive for domestic markets. I mean, everybody knows Michigan cherries, you know, that's what you think of.
Both in Turkey and here in the United States, at the base of those commercial cherry trees, there's a farm family. Somebody's doing the work to bring it to you. So somebody is getting.
Apparently, the problem with the Turkish cherries is they are being sold under less than market value. Either, of course, probably labor is cheaper in Turkey. However, also, it's a dilemma.
It is. Another thing to think about.
I mean, they still have to send it halfway, you know, across the Atlantic Ocean, so there's transportation involved, but somehow they are bringing it in more cheaply. And according to the newspaper article, they're actually selling it even below the Turkish cost because they want to develop their international market and, of course, knowing that it will drive out our domestic production.
That sounds like another thing on the list for considering tariffs and trade wars. And
the actual use of those tariffs and trade wars. But, you know, this is not one that has much political impetus behind it, except that the Michigan and Utah cherry market is being very adversely affected. So.
Hmm. cherries.
Life is not a bowl of cherries.
No, it's not. There's all kinds of other considerations. So let's think about the people.
You can grow your own here in Iowa.
Yeah. And there's you pick cherry places. And
it's true. But by the time you pick them, pit them, and then think about drying them, that's why they're so expensive. That's major,
true.
You know, a lot of labor for those little
beauties. I do like those dried cherries. And was it last week or the week before at the farmer's market, there was the ice cream truck that had roasted cherries in some goat milk ice cream.
Yum.
Roasted. I mean, it's something about making them a little, not burnt, but caramelish.
Yeah, and of course, roasting would concentrate the flavors.
Was that ever?
But they still have to be picked and pitted.
So think of the people that pick and pit. So, do you make pies? Do you make...
I am a lazy cherry picker. I'm lucky if I get them picked. So I have a few tricks, or they might be called excuses. We are going to talk a bit later about cherry pitters and the beauties of the mechanical cherry pitter. But if one is not like my tree is young, so I'm not going to have buckets and buckets of them. So what I'm probably going to do are one of two options. I will put some in a jar and cover them with brandy. So you have it makes a lovely little, midwinter topping. You can put it on, some like panna cotta or something with brandied cherries on top for Christmas.
Do you add just that? Do you add any sugar to it or just plain?
Well, the last time I did it, I just plain.
Yeah,
but the
plain.
Last time I did it, I actually used Benedictine and brandy, which is a little bit sweeter. And oh my goodness, was that, it's a real treat. Like if you want to give it for Christmas presents, you're going to be making in small jars, but it's delicious because it flavors the liquor itself. And then the cherries, of course, are flavored by the liquor. So you end up with two things, a very nice cherried brandy cordial and then the brandied cherry, which can be used on desserts and all kinds, or just pick them up and eat them.
It's not too early to think about Christmas presents.
No, it's not.
And when we have this glut, this wonderful thing where the berries and the cherries, they're here.
Because with the brandy, you need to let them sit in the brandy. 6 weeks is probably good in the pantry, but they can go on for months and months and months, and they're always still good. And the other thing that I think I'm going to try this year is, and this was from our friend Gio, the Georgian tradition of you just boil them in a little sugar syrup, and I think he freezes them. But they also could be canned that way with the pits in because he says they just, at a Georgian dinner table, they just put a bowl of cherries on the table and everyone helps themselves as a dessert and they pick their own pits out like you would with an olive or something. So then that actually makes each little bundle, it's not like you're eating fistfuls. You have to thoughtfully have one and take the pit out, but that's it delivers the flavor with minimal labor.
Right. I mean, you might as well enjoy these wonderful things. Thinking of, we haven't heard the term for a while, but slow food, slow down, and especially after a nice dinner, just kind of sit there and have a little nibble, a treat, a sweet. Oh, yes. Oh, you mentioned the taste of the cherry pit itself.
Oh, that's true. There is a reason for preserving them with the pits in it. It's kind of like peach pits. They have a bit of an almond-like flavor themselves. So like when you're doing the peach in the brandy, I mean the cherry in the brandy, the pit of the cherry itself will add some flavor to the final product, which is also true if you're just making a sugar syrup and preserving them. And by letting them sit for a while or rest in either the sugar syrup or the brandy, it penetrates in through the fruit and gets some of the flavor from the pit.
Yeah,
there is a method to this madness. Ah. I mean, madness to the – no. There's a method to the madness. Right. That's the saying. Right. There's a reason to do it. It does add something to it. It's not just about being lazy.
Well, true. I think
It,
being very efficient and thinking ahead. For the cherries in brandy, you put them in whole or do you mush them a little bit?
No, you just put them in whole.
Oh, then it'd be very pretty.
In fact, leaving them, but in both instances, leaving them as intact as possible. I don't put the stems in, but you know, you want to pull the little stem off delicately so you're really not bursting that kind of sack of flavor that you have there with the cherry flesh.
That sounds like a lovely thing to do with cherries. Oh, yes. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen Tasty Radio for the heart of Iowa. Welcome back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. We're talking cherries today. Cherries. That was a little bit of music from a real fine musician, Peter Ostrushko. Remember Peter Ostrushko? He used to be on the Prairie Home Companion a lot. Fine musician, mandolin player like you wouldn't believe. Real fine guy. I think he's from the Minneapolis area. And it's from his CD called Postcards. Yes, that tune was called Dayton Cakewalk Delight. Ah, thinking of desserts. We, like I said, are talking about cherries and the things that are ripening now, just begging to be picked and eaten. Cherries are one of them. Don and I did some kitchen research on some cherry pitters. This is from a Donna Lana show, June 2017. Cherries are wonderful. But they have this aspect to them that one must deal with. They come with pits. They come with little stones in the middle. Okay, let's talk about getting those little suckers pitted, okay?
Oh, boy. Well, there's the old unfurl the paper clip and poke them through one by one. Yeah.
That takes forever. You get kind of sticky doing that.
Yeah. And did you tell me Joe has a method of using a plastic straw?
We practiced with some variations on a theme this weekend, putting a pop bottle or a beer bottle and balancing the cherry on top, glass one, mm-hmm. and poking through with a straw. He says, yeah, it works just fine. The seed drops into the bottle. The cherry, unless it's teeny tiny, stays on top. But that's one of those.
And the juice goes dribbling all the way down the bottle.
And the juice goes dribbling all the way down the bottle. That's one of those that it's one at a time. And you need a lot of cherries for a cherry pie.
Well, you know, we've gotten modern and impatient, I'm afraid, right?
Yes, we did.
So Lana and I each brought our cherry pitters into the studio here. And we need television for this, but we're going to try our best to describe these experiences. So,
my cherry picker, and I must say I'm not a prolific cherry picker for obvious reasons. Okay, I found it at the Wilson Auction in Cole Oak, where often I'm the only person buying these culinary antiques, let's say. So, you know, this one said, it says New Standard Mount Joy, Pennsylvania, and it's a contraption made out of cast aluminum, and it's from the period where they still had those green wooden handles on everything. So I'm guessing it's got to be, maybe 75 to 100 years. It's old. It's old. But this is what, hear that noise? I'm cranking the handle. So it has a little sort of cup kind of thing, and you put the, apparently it's angled so that, you know, let's see, I could put maybe 15 cherries on it, right? Oh, boy. Let's line it up, Lana, and see what happens. Oh, no. Oh, wait a minute. We need two containers. Okay. All right. So it has a little thing. You turn the handle, and let's see. Okay. Here we go. It presses down. Ooh, it's working, Lana.
It picks up a cherry.
Yeah, it picks. It has a little sharp thing that has it's like a four-pointed star. So it pierces the cherry. Oh, wait, I'm going backwards. It pierces the cherry. It pushes the pit out. And then as it draws up, the cherry spits off into the bowl. Oh, Lana, let's see how fast it will go. Oops. Uh-oh. All right, this pit is not. Oh, shoot. That one went on the floor. Okay. All right. It's working. Whoops. Lana, they're jumping off the Oops, come on.
I think in the history of cherry pitters, This is the problem. It goes all over the place.
Well, but you know what? I've had other old ones that are messier than this one, I have to say. This is relatively, efficient. Okay, so I just pitted maybe 10 cherries, okay?
We're not counting the three that hit the floor.
Yeah, but yeah. Good job. I have cherry juice all over my dress. And then there's two more on the floor. Okay, now Lana has a more newfangled contraption.
We wanted to see what was the latest in cherry pitters. I mean, there had to be something between pop bottle with a straw. And these old ones are great. They look like Rube Goldberg contraptions.
Yeah, I could live with this one if I had to.
It's okay. Ka-chunk, ka-chunk, ka-chunk. Because nothing's worse than biting into a cherry pit in a pie. You still may get a cherry pit. Talked to the fine folks at Cook's Emporium and said, what's the latest? What's the latest in cherry pit technology? And there is a company called Victorio, and they make a lot of kitchen products, a lot of nice kitchen products. The inventors at Victorio evidently took the old technology and moved it one notch ahead because it's plastic, for one thing.
It's
really heavy-duty plastic. One nice thing about it, it's gotten one of these suction cups that sucks it right to the counter. Good job.
And yeah, mine is clamped to the counter. Yeah.
They've also worked out the little tray, and you can, you don't have to do one at a time, but.
All right, I'm going to take mine off. We're going to try Lana's.
All right.
Wait till you hear. Wait, Lana, you better do this because lots of sound effects today,
folks. I didn't do it.
Here we
go. One of the strange things about this is that you do have to follow the directions. It's got, like, not many parts, but it does have parts.
Oops.
This one has a little pit pocket already.
Oh, the container underneath it.
However, it doesn't have many parts at all, and, of course, it came with directions. But it's real easy when you put it together to forget one of the parts. So even with this nice new cherry pitter, I ended up with a mess a couple times until I decided to go back and read the directions.
Yeah,
here we go.
Follow the directions. Okay.
So here we go.
Okay. One. Oh, it's, oops. Okay. Same problem as mine. The container that slants them in, you still have to use your fingers. Okay. You know what? Actually, the principle of it is not too different. Look at Lana, the cutter blade.
Mm-hmm. Same thing.
Four-point thing.
So technology does come to our rescue. Yes, it does.
Oh, I like this one.
Yeah, it is nice. It does suck. Yeah, it sucks to my kind.
That sure beats the poking them one at a time.
Yes.
Plus, none of them jumped out of the tray, and none of them got on my dress. Okay. 5 stars out of 5 for the Victorio.
Very good, Victorio.
All right.
And like I said, they make other sort of handy kitchen things.
Oh, yeah, I think I have some. Oh, right, I have their grain mill. Mm-hmm. Oh, and, of course, the apple corer. That's famous.
Another fruit thing.
Yeah.
Good. It says on the
apple peeler.
Information from the Victoria people that the company is out in Utah someplace. So it's a sort of a semi-American thing.
Yeah.
Well, we don't know where they outsource things, but that's where they say it is. That's good. So how to get the pits out? Oh, my goodness. Well, we had quite a lot of fun doing that. Matter of fact, we have way too much fun doing this show, and except for making a mess, cherries are really fun to deal with. I actually, before I got this Vittorio plastic jobber, which I use, it's a good one.
I might have to borrow yours.
Yeah, you can have it. I did have one like Donna's with the old-fashioned crank one. I never even tried to do it in my kitchen. I just moved the whole thing out to my deck and let things spew as they would.
Because you can hose it down.
Yeah. If you do have a lot of cherries, just go for it. It's okay. Because cherries in brandy and cherries, to eat one by one is lovely, but I do like cherry pie, and I don't like a pit in a cherry pie.
No. So I must say I've had the pleasure of your cherry pies, and I'm very grateful that you've pitted those cherries. It is a special pie.
It is. Cherry pie. And
It's about my favorite, I have to say.
I like to make it with the traditional crissy-cross crust.
Oh, the lattice,
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you're going to fuss, you might as well fuss. Oh, yes. So, enough about cherries. We got other things to move on to.
Strawberries now.
Strawberries.
Oh. And it's going to be a very short season. I talked to Lee's Greens, Lee, at the farmer's market and actually got a flat of strawberries. He thinks maybe we'll get one more week out of it, you know, because it's been wet and cold. The strawberries look nice. They're good. They're not as sweet as some years. But at least this year we're going to have strawberries. Last year we barely had any. Remember, somehow the rain was just wrong.
Well, one thing about strawberries is they just live there right next to the ground. And if they're sitting in water or if they don't get enough sunshine down
there,
right. Well,
there, so not we're, so we're good. Warning you folks, if you want local strawberries, now is the time to go out and find them. I didn't call Berry Patch, but they usually have a good U-pick. And then Lee is selling them at the farmer's market. There's a few around town. I mean, the local strawberries are, it's always a treat. It's, you know, kind of the beginning of the fruit season. So it has arrived.
Yes, strawberries in season.
But you won't see buckets of them everywhere.
No,
so
they're pretty, pretty precious. That's pretty darn good. It's one of those things, yes, you can find strawberries in the grocery store all year, but like tomatoes, the ones in season are so much better. I refer to the other strawberries as strawberry-like objects.
They're there,
but
People buy them, and actually Driscoll's, which is the main berry-producing company, and they do a lot of research, and they are, of course, making more effort to breed more flavor into them. But, you know, it's a California company, and so any berry that you pick is going to have traveled quite a long distance.
Strawberries are going to be the local ones. But again, enjoy them while they're here.
Get them when you can.
I was going to make some strawberry shortcake last night. Because I remembered to buy some cream, and there I had a little bit of nice strawberries. And I thought, wait a minute, I want supper, too. And so this is kind of a combination. I just made some really, really good French toast and put strawberries and cream on top of French toast with a little maple syrup. So,
sounds like a good dinner to me.
Yeah, every now and then you realize, I'm a grown-up. I can have this for supper.
I can have breakfast for supper.
And I did. And it was good. So, that was nice. I enjoyed that a lot.
Well, and strawberries are followed by blueberries and other yummy things that are
we do have a lot more blueberries, and the season is a lot longer around here, so we've got that to look forward
yeah,
to.
Yeah, I like blueberries. Easier to pick. They're a little higher up. Oh, another thing about the strawberries that I just fresh strawberries, cut them up, sprinkle a little sugar on them, and I like this word, let them macerate, which means the juice starts to run out. Macerate,
well,
right?
and there's a lovely thing that the Italians do to their fresh strawberries. You don't put too much sugar on them, but you also put just a dash of balsamic vinegar and a little black pepper if you're macerating, as it were.
Macerating.
Yes.
Oh, I like that word. Yes, it is. I think, doesn't that mean to eat, to chew, macerate? Masticate.
No, that's masticate.
Oh, masticate, masquerade. Masturbate.
Yeah.
Oh, word of the day here. Yeah. Okay, there you go. Yeah. Oh, anyway, strawberries, very good. Well,
macerate is more closely related to marinate.
But, marinate.
But implies a slightly shorter, non... It's not as temperature dependent as marinade. Marinade goes longer and it usually applies to meats, possibly vegetables, but yeah.
Very good. And when you do that to fruit, not just strawberries, it softens them. It gets the juices working. So, yeah, if you want a little – I like
right,
it when
that works with
juicy.
Tomatoes too. The second mm-hmm. you add – well, or even just when you cut them, they start to juice out.
Mm-hmm.
And that's true of strawberries as well.
Oh, very good. Strawberries, cherries. Oh, very good. KHOI. This is KHOI, and this is the Donna Lana Kitchen. You can find out more about the Donna Lana Kitchen by going to www.khoifm.org. We've got amid all the other wonderful things that you'll find out about this great community radio station, we've got a Donna Lana Kitchen page there, and you can find past shows, recipes, and fun stuff about us. Yes. Let's listen to a little bit more of Peter Ostrushko. Welcome back. Welcome to a summer berry experience here. Donna, do you have any words of wisdom about shortcake?
Well, and we might as well start thinking about this because under any berry, a shortcake is delightful, you know, to soak up those macerated juices, right?
Right.
So shortcake, it's short, right?
Huh?
It doesn't take long to make. It also can be made with shortening. It's basically sweetened biscuit dough. Or scone batter is roughly the same as well.
Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, if you buy those little spongy shortcakes in the grocery store, in my heart of hearts, that is not a shortcake.
Yeah, that's like a sponge cake. But
yeah, it's
but it does come with a little cup.
Yeah, right. But that's – I don't even buy them because it doesn't take much to make your own. It's really one of the easiest things to make. And you know, you can either plop it onto the baking sheet and have a blob like in a biscuit, or you can lightly roll it and cut it like you would with a scone. Or you can do cobbler style, you know, where you just butter your deep baking dish, throw in the berries. More likely you're going to do this with blueberries or blueberries and peaches. And then you blob the dough on the top and put the whole thing in the oven, and it kind of – the juices of the cooking berries kind of come up through the cobbler topping, and it's all basically a biscuit dough with a little – I do tend to add, you know, in addition to the usual – I don't make them too sweet, and I do add usually put a little coriander, ground coriander in it. You can add – you can put a little vanilla. You could skew it towards lemon or even – not too much, but a little bit of almond. So you can slightly flavor those biscuit doughs.
Ooh.
For the berries.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
That sounds good.
Yeah.
When I was first starting learning how to cook, there's always the box of Bisquick, which is kind of a real quick
cheat. Well, really,
cheat.
All Bisquick is it's got the leavening in the flour, right?
We can learn to measure.
Yeah, yeah, and you can make it with butter. You can make it with cream. Buttermilk is sometimes used. Lard can be used. You can vary the fat that you want to put in, and depending on how much fat you want to. Of course, you're going to put the whipped cream on the top, and it's like my mother used to say, when you're making something like that, not to be too stingy with the fat. She'd say, you might as well throw the tail in with the hide.
Oh,
that's a Missouri saying. I don't know exactly. I mean,
that sounds
it's
right.
It's kind
tasty.
Of like going whole hog
going
or something
whole
with
hog.
It. You know,
yes,
you might
you
as
do.
Well if you're going to do it, you might as well gild the lily. That's another thing she used to say. Be over the top.
You should. We should. Because we should celebrate.
Right. Because you don't do this every day.
Yes.
It's not local berry season every day.
That's true.
And you can practice your shortcake skills, because we do have 4th of July coming up. A wonderful time for shortcakes.
Good idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not
have at it.
Yeah. Very good. Everybody likes that sort of thing. Ice cream. Whipped cream. Oh, all that kind of thing. So I have a book here I'd like to share, and it's got a bit about strawberries in it. It gets me thinking about what the earth provides. I've been reading a book called Braiding Sweetgrass, Indigenous Wisdom, Scientific Knowledge, and the Teaching of Plants by Robin Wall Kimmerer. Robin Wall Kimmerer is a mother scientist, a professor, and an enrolled member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation. She lives in upstate New York. She has a wonderful way of writing about Native traditions, Native wisdom, but she's a botanist. She knows all about the science.
She was supposed to come for an ISU lecture this year, and somehow travel weather made it impossible. So I'm hoping she will come next year during the lecture season. I'm looking forward to it.
Oh, very good.
So let's become familiar with her work, and maybe she'll come and see us here.
Robin Wall Kimmerer. Braiding sweetgrass refers to the sweetgrass that is grown for ceremony in Native American cultures, and also
it is braided.
It's long,
and it's a very pretty long, usually I don't know, maybe 18 inches, mm-hmm. and it's burned kind of like incense,
mm-hmm.
and it has a sweet smell, sweet like new mown hay almost.
Mm-hmm. Connects us with the earth.
And many Native American tribes do burn the sweetgrass.
Robin Wall Kimmerer writes about the mindset, the idea of what we believe about the earth. What is our due? She has thoughts about the gift economy versus the commodity economy. The thoughts about abundance versus scarcity. What does the earth give us? What do we need to give back? A chapter of hers is called The Gift of Strawberries. And she is writing about her experience growing up as a child in upstate New York. And they lived in an area where there was wild strawberries. She also worked on a commercial strawberry farm as a child, too. But she's talking here of the wild strawberries, the idea of a gift as opposed to what you have to purchase. A gift of strawberries. white petals with a yellow center, like a little wild rose. They dotted the acres of curled grass during the flower moon. We kept good track of them, peeking under the trifoliate leaves to check their progress as we ran through on our way to catch frogs. After the flower finally dropped its petals, a tiny green nub appeared in its place, and as the days got longer and warmer, it smelled so sweet, changed to a small white berry. These were sour, but we ate them anyway, impatient for the real thing. You could smell ripe strawberries before you saw them, the fragrance mingling with the smell of sun on damp ground. It was the smell of June, the last days of school when we were set free, the strawberry moon. I'd lie on my stomach in my favorite patch, watch the berries get sweeter and bigger. Each tiny wild berry was scarcely bigger than a raindrop, dimpled with seeds. Even now, after more than 50 strawberry moons, finding a patch of wild strawberries still touches me with a sensation of surprise, a feeling of unworthiness and gratitude for the generosity and kindness that comes with an unexpected gift, all wrapped in red and green. Really? For me? Oh, you shouldn't have. After 50 years, they still raise the question of how to respond to their generosity. Sometimes it feels like a silly question with a very simple answer. Just eat them. But I know that someone else has wondered about the same thing. In our creation stories, the origin of strawberries is important. Sky Woman's beautiful daughter, whom she carried in her womb from the sky world, grew on the good green earth, loving and loved by all beings. But tragedy befell her. She died giving birth to her twins. And Sky Woman buried her beloved daughter in the earth. Her final gift, our most revered plant, grew from her body. The strawberry arose from her heart. In Potawatomi, the strawberry is called the heart berry. We recognize them as the leaders of the berries. Strawberries first shaped my view of the world full of gifts simply by the fact that they're scattered at your feet. A gift comes to you through no action of your own, free, having moved towards you without your beckoning. It is not a reward. You can't earn it. You can't call it to you or even deserve it. And yet it appears. Your only role is to be open-eyed and present. Gifts exist in a realm of humility and mystery, as with random acts of kindness. We do not know their source. That was from Braiding Sweetgrass by Robin Wall Kimmerer. She finds her way.
Yes, and the other thing about wild strawberries is they are, she does mention the fragrance. It is astounding. The flavor is also more than the best strawberry you could have. Some reason they're tiny, 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 but they pack a punch of the most delicate, aromatic, and flavorful pop that you could have in your mouth. They really, truly are a treasure.
Again, thinking of where it comes from, that is a gift. I don't think you can probably buy wild strawberries. You find them.
You know, in France, they're cultivated, and it's a slightly
cultivated.
It's called a frais de bois, is strawberry of the woods, and they are very, very tiny and rare, even in the market. But they are highly prized for that super extraordinary flavor that they do have.
So let's show some gratitude and reciprocation and say thank you to the earth for these berries that we've been talking
about. Right, we tend to only we have our Iowa berries probably because those are, you know, the kind of, there are some varieties that do uniformly well. When I was in California, you would go to the market during, and there would be like 5 varieties of strawberries, and you would taste them all and see all the differences.
There's differences.
And each one has its virtues.
Enjoy the berry season. Oh, yes. Thanks for joining us today. Donald in the Kitchen comes to you every Tuesday at noon, repeat at 7 p.m. You can listen anytime at khoifm.org. You can stream, you can download, share us with your friends, and do remember to support community radio. KHO archives and recipes are on that site. It's summer berries are here. Enjoy, enjoy. We had music today from Peter Ostrushko from his CD Postcards. My name is Lana Nachtigal.
And I'm Donna Pristintas.
Excellent engineering by Evan Taylor. Eat good food and enjoy life.